Ryan Dixon and Rory Boylan host Tape to Tape, the hockey podcast by Sportsnet.
3, 2, 1. And there you go. The Vegas Golden Knights.
Oh, the neons are a-gleaming and the gamblers are a-dreaming. Oh, it's a nightlife.
The Vegas nightlife. Golden Knights.
The chips go a-spilling and it's time to make a killing. Oh, it's a nightlife. Yeah, nightlife.
Oh, welcome to Tape to Tape, T2T. I'm Ryan Dixon. I am a writer for Sportsnet Magazine and Sportsnet.ca. Sitting to my left, already scheming on his first Golden Knights road trip. It is Sportsnet's NHL senior producer, Rory Boylan.
The most overrated Thanksgiving fixin' is stuffing.
Oh, we went right to the holiday debate. Well, you would get some pushback there from our producer, Sam, and no doubt from a whole bunch of Americans celebrating Thanksgiving this weekend. I'm sure throughout the entire weekend. Here we are in Canada. I feel like we should know more about our American neighbors. Like, do they have meals? Like, is there like 3 and 4 days because of all the family? Is it actually a better holiday than Christmas?
I think it's one big meal.
Okay.
Like that lasts 4 days.
But it's just sprawl.
You're just eating.
In honor of America, it's just sprawl. Well done. We are going to talk about America's newest hockey team, the Vegas Golden Knights. We're going to get Chris Creamer on here from sportslogos.net to break down what we saw with the logo and maybe chat about some of the outdoor, whether it be the Centennial game or just the regular stadium series, NHL Winter Classic logos we've seen this year and in the recent past. We're also going to get sportsnet.ca's Luke Fox to come on, wrap a little bit about what's going on with the Canadian teams right now and probably ask Luke a few Vegas questions as well. Rory, what were your thoughts on, we saw the rollout wasn't exactly seamless.
Not smooth. Not smooth.
You know what? In honor of an expansion team, there should have been some bumps. But what do you think of this whole, I guess, we'll call it an experiment maybe because it's the first pro team of the big four there. But what do you think about this whole Vegas scene so far?
It's interesting. I can't wait to see how this plays out over the first 5, 10 years that they're there because it's such a different market, and you wonder if the NFL is going to move in there at some point. There have been rumblings. I don't think it's official.
Oakland is inching. I'm not up to the minute, but I think they're getting closer and closer.
Yeah, and obviously their season doesn't last as long, and you're not going to have midweek games or anything like that, so maybe it doesn't overlap too much. But it is football, and football, as we know, rules in the States. But, you know, I hope that, and Bill Foley talked about investing in the grassroots game, and I hope that that leads to, you know, more minor league programs, maybe some Division I programs in the NCAA hockey. And if you get that going, then it's going to be a huge success. That's kind of what it's all about, right, is spreading the game.
And especially in the year when Austin Matthews is drafted first overall and expected to lead a once wandering Canadian franchise out of the wilderness, right?
We've had a number of players from California drafted. Those teams have been around for a number of years. It's going to take time. It's not going to be overnight you're going to suddenly have these great programs in Nevada or anything like that, but it's going to take time, and if they're going to invest in that, then this is going to be worth it. But what's the attendance? The attendance is probably going to be great in year one. What's it going to be like in year five if they haven't made the playoffs yet? What's this team going to look like?
Well, yeah, but also, I mean, the NHL is talking about, you know, equipping this expansion team much better than ones in the past.
Yes.
Do you think that's going to, I mean, there's going to be some intriguing names available.
You'd think so, but I also think there's going to be some maneuvering done by those teams to make sure that they don't have to expose. Like, I don't think Marc-Andre Fleury is going to get exposed. I think something's,
whether it's
a trade or with another team or it's a trade with Vegas where, you know, don't pick them and we'll give you this or whatever.
Rounder.
I just can't see a team. They're too smart now. They've had so much time to prepare for these kind of things. I would be hard-pressed to imagine that a team would let a guy like Marc-Andre Fleury go unprotected. The best chance might be Ben Bishop, who's going to be a UFA, so you'd have to work out a deal with him before you picked him up. But even, you know, I've seen some mock drafts done, and you look at the team that they're end up with, and they're not going to be a great team. Are they going to be better suited than some of the expansion teams of the recent past? Probably, because they're the only team coming in. So you're not having to draft with a second team and have all this, you know, really watered down talent. You're going to have a better team, I think, than like the Minnesota Wild entered with, but I still don't think you're going to have a playoff team. I don't think you're going to have a great team.
Sure.
You're going to be, you know, I haven't seen the roster yet, but I think you're still going to be a bottom five team. Look at the teams that are in the bottom five. Like, the Islanders are still a pretty good team. They definitely took a step back. They're still a pretty good team. The Carolina Hurricanes are trending up, and they're still a pretty good team. I just don't see how Vegas is going to be so much better than these already established teams that have a pretty good base.
Well, we know one thing they're not going to have is a megastar to start out with. Not the likes of Connor McDavid or Sidney Crosby or Alex Ovechkin, but the league as a whole obviously does have those guys, and man, they're shining right now. Like, the NHL has got to be, I mean, we're here talking a little football because it's Thanksgiving. I mean, the NFL, there's not enough good quarterbacks to stalk all 30 teams, you know, and there's, aside from a couple big stars, you know, there's not a whole lot that the league can put its arms around, and that's what a big league wants. And right now the NHL's got to be putting its feet up and going, you know, those guys I mentioned, plus the young guys who have come into the league and really shone.
That's the kicker. Because you have Connor McDavid leading the league in scoring. You have Sidney Crosby up there. Alex Ovechkin, coming off his hat trick, is now among the league leaders in goals. You know, Steven Stamkos goes down in Tampa Bay. Well, you got Nikita Kucherov, another emerging talent. Mark Scheifele, an emerging talent. Vladimir Tarasenko, we saw this coming with his last 2 years or so. And he's up there among the points leaders. Tyler Seguin. Like, these are all the guys that you would want. There's no outlier, really. I guess the biggest outlier
Michael,
might be
Alex Ovechkin. We'll call Michael Grabner an outlier with 2 goals less than Sidney Crosby. Sorry.
I was talking points. So points-wise, I mean, Alex Galchenyuk might be the biggest outlier. And even he's still, you know, he was a
third overall pick. Yeah. He's just coming into his own here.
Yeah, so it's not like he's a complete outlier. He's another emerging talent. You got all these big stars, and then, like you said, the Calder race is going to be amazing this year. It's one of the most anticipated. Can't wait to see how it plays out. They did a vote on the broadcast on Wednesday night who was going to win the Calder, and Austin Matthews wasn't even the top.
Yeah, it's crazy. Well, just to bring a little more talent into the fold, we have Sportsnet.ca's Luke Fox on the line. Luke, how you doing?
A lot of pressure now. I'm doing okay.
Connor McDavid, Sidney Crosby, Luke Fox.
That's right, man. Hey, Luke's he's multi-talented, though, a music man as well. Luke, what did you think of what you saw from the Vegas unveiling and so far with the logo and team name?
Okay, so 50-50 split here. The logo, I really like. I think it's strong, and it took me half a day at night when I first saw it. I thought, you know, that's pretty cool. And then in the morning, it wasn't till then that it hit me that there was actually a V in the Knights mask. For some reason, my brain didn't.
If someone register. Didn't point that out to me, I would have completely missed it.
Yeah, and then I said, to my wife, I was like, oh, cool, look, it has a V for Vegas. And she's like, yeah, I saw that right away. I'm a fan of the logo. The name, it really threw me that they dropped the loss and just went with Vegas. And I heard Bill Foley's, the owner's, explanation for it, and how that's what the locals call it. They just call it Vegas. And, yep, a lot of people do just call it Vegas. A lot of people going on Stags say we're going to Vegas. But just for the formal name, I'd rather see the loss there. Also Golden Knights. I preferred Black Knights. I know there were reasons why that he couldn't use Black Knights or just simply Knights. And I heard that, I guess the London Knights own the rights to that name in Canada, but he said, Foley said that he could have worked something out where he could have got it. I think, Golden Knights is a little long. I don't hate it, but the absence of the word, lost before Vegas kind of bugs me a little bit.
It's been very hard sitting here not making a joke that it's a real loss for the team. I was on Vegas 21s the whole time, but I knew it would never happen. A good number nickname. Luke, speaking of nicknames, I know you wrote a piece about how some of the other quote-unquote recent expansion teams got their names. You want to give us a couple of the highlights?
Oh, gosh. Let me see. Well, the Predators was quite interesting because they created the logo before they had a name, which I thought was really cool. They uncovered this giant saber-tooth
yes.
from a saber-toothed tiger. I think when they were clearing land to erect a building downstairs, and they found this giant tooth, and that was part of the city's history, and they thought it was a big thing in Tennessee, so they're like, okay, we're going to make the logo and then figure out the name later. And there was a bunch of names that related to the logo, and then the owner at the time, I think, vetoed them all, and he had a fan vote, but then threw his own in there, Predators, and it became Predators. It's like, we'll hold a contest and appease the fans, but in the end, I'm just going to pick the name I like. So I thought that was kind of funny.
We talked a bit in the opening here about how competitive this Vegas team might be, and I am hard-pressed to believe that another NHL team is going to leave somebody like a Marc-Andre Fleury unprotected and not work out something with either Vegas or a trade with another team, because the teams are just so smart these days. And if you look at the teams who are on the bottom of the league outside of Vancouver, you're talking Islanders, you're talking Carolina, like they're not bad teams. So I can't believe this Vegas team is going to be so much better than some of these teams. How do you, I mean, I've seen some mock drafts out there, which will probably change, but how good do you think this team is going to be out of the gate?
So, funny you ask. I just got off the phone with the folks at Cap Friendly, who created an expansion team draft tool, and they've been running it like crazy, and they've seen all the data from all the mock drafts the fans run. So they were saying this team is going to be strong on defense. We'll probably get a good goalie, regardless if Fleury's available. My personal opinion, no way he's available. Mm-hmm. He's too valuable, and Jim Rutherford is not a dumb man, so he'll find a trading partner for him. There's too many teams that need a number one that are either going with tandems or just have poor goaltending. So he'll work out some sort of deal, or he could work out a side deal with George McPhee in Vegas, where he's like, okay, let us keep him, and then you ignore him, and we'll give you a pick or something like that. Those are allowed. So I would find it really surprising if Fleury is the starting goaltender for the Golden Knights next year. The other thing is, I think Fleury wants to win, so this team will not be good. They should be okay defensively. They should have a half decent goalie, but the way the expansion draft shakes out, it's looking like they're not going to have anyone who could put the puck in the net. It's going to be really, really thin up front. They're going to have a hard time to find goals, which is not something you want for a new team, like to build excitement. But just the way the draft's going to shake out, at least as it is now, they're going to be a defense-first team, which doesn't scream, the glitz and glamour of Vegas. But we'll see. There's a lot that's going to happen. The trade deadline this year won't be the snooze fest it usually is because of this draft. So we'll see. But I would expect it's going to be a bad team that's good on defense but cannot score.
Just jumping into some of the Canadian teams, Luke, we talked about the Vegas potential goaltending situation. How about the one in Calgary where it looks like Chad Johnson is making a real push to make himself the number one there? I mean, on one hand, this is obviously not a guy with a huge NHL resume, but you look last year, I mean, he had a .920 save percentage, 45 games in Buffalo. Do you think there's a chance this is the Flames guy going forward?
Yeah, I think there's a chance. I mean, he's basically winning the job. The interesting thing there is neither of these guys has a contract for next year. And this is the second full season that Calgary has gone with a tandem of goalies where no one has security. So it's a battle. And they're kind of, well, both of them, not kind of, they are playing for money and for livelihood. So if Chad Johnson can excel, and he's always been a decent number two, this has been his greatest chance to actually steal the job. And why not? Speaking of Marc-Andre Fleury, Calgary could be one of those teams that takes a look at him late, in 2017. But yeah, Johnson has done well, and the job's there. You know, it's funny. There were reports around training camp that Brian Elliott was already talking extension with the Flames, and you got to imagine those are ice cold right now. So it's wide open in Calgary, and I think there's more pressure. Even though they're a young team, a rebuilding team, I think there's more pressure to win than a lot of people realize. Like, I think they want to get back to the playoffs now. And, you know, it could cost people jobs if they don't.
I want to ask about this report today about Alexander Radulov's agent being open. Surprise, surprise, surprise. He's open to working out a long-term extension between Radulov and the Montreal Canadiens after a great start for Radulov. I mean, obviously he would like to lock something in so early in the season. You know, it's like buy high or get in while his value is so high. Do you see any interest in the Montreal Canadiens wanting to lock him up now, or just kind of let's wait and see how this goes for another few months, and if he cools down and or if he keeps going, and what kind of a contract would you think he might get?
Well, I think they're gonna not hope he cools down, but they're gonna wait it out. Bergevin told an outlet in the States a couple weeks ago that he referenced Thomas Vanek, right, who came in at the 2014 deadline and was like a surprise and major steal. It was kind of considered the best deadline scoop at the time, and Vanek lit it up. Then came the 2014 playoffs, and his stick went silent. So, you know, Bergevin, I think, learned from that. And it's like, yes, the media and the fans and maybe the agent will start talking re-signing right away, but let's just play it out and then evaluate. That said, I think Radulov's been a fantastic fit there. The fan base seems to love him. You don't hear any worries off ice. Apparently, he's there was a good quote from Therrien the other day saying that he even loves coming to team meetings. So he's been a great fit. And if you find a good fit, why not try to make it work? I know the guy loves money as much or more than the average person. last summer, it was rumored he was asking for as much as 7.5, which is pretty ridiculous when you're coming from the KHL with a shoddy reputation off ice. But you know, if it's a good fit, why not try to make it work? It'll just come down to how greedy he is in the spring. But if you find a good fit, he seems to have chemistry with Galchenyuk. It's like, why not try to make this work long term? Like Montreal needs scoring, and he's providing that right now. So why not try to make it work?
Footnote, of course, on that, the I believe they can't sign him until January 1st anyway, so they'll have to there's a natural extension of the runway here before any decision gets made. The decision on the Calder Trophy, I mean, we referenced it quickly earlier, but I mean, what do you think, Luke? It's such a right now, I mean, Line A's somewhat coming back to earth, but he's still got unbelievable numbers. Who knows? Maybe Austin Matthews, now that he broke his goalless slump, will go on a tear. I mean, if you had to project forward whatever it is, 5 months, who would you say, I think this will be the guy we'll be elevating just a nose ahead of everyone else when it's finally time to pick this?
Well, I had to make this prediction at the beginning of the season, and I picked Mitch Marner, so I'm going to stick with my pick. You know, we got three Leafs in the mix for that trophy: Matthews, Marner, and Nylander. And as great as Matthews is, as complete as he is, and as you know, obviously he's going to score at a better. You won't. I'd be surprised if he went on another 13 game goal drought. But Marner is so impressive, especially live. Like when you see his, I don't like to use the word compete level, but his effort, like how hard he tries, is just insane. He'll be ready to go off for a shift, like he'll need to make a change. But instead of just kind of turning his head and going off and making the change, he's still looking at the puck, still trying to get a takeaway or impede the other team's lines or a pass. He doesn't Like, he just doesn't stop. And we saw it last night. He almost got a goal by bowling over Mike Camilleri right in the crease in overtime in the 3-on-3. And that's not like a skill play. That's just like an effort, a desire play. And he's magic. And I think because he's playing with a couple of veterans in JVR and Bozak, I think that'll help his numbers, especially as we go deeper into the season, whereas Matthews is on the all-rookie line. Now, Lonnie's awesome. His shot's incredible. I think his shooting percentage will come down, and he might trail away a bit in the Rocket-Richard race. Another guy we should mention is Zach Werenski in Columbus, the defenseman. And he's playing like over 22 minutes a night. He's like a rookie, and he's become their horse on the back end, and he's putting up points. So there's no shortage of guys in the race, and it's really fun, and it's brought a lot of excitement to the league this year, and it's like a positive thing we can talk about.
Crazy to think that there was some question as to whether Marner would even make the Leafs and whether he would stick around. So, yeah, no doubts there, that's for sure. Luke, thanks for coming on today and sharing your thoughts.
Okay, thanks for having me, guys.
That is Luke Fox of Sportsnet.ca. You can follow Luke at Luke Fox Jukebox on the Twitter. Coming up next on Tape to Tape, we're going to dial up Chris Creamer, and we're going to talk a little Vegas logo that is coming up on the other side of the break on Tape to Tape.
It's good to have weird dudes.
He really did. The Columbus Blue Jackets coach talked about his childhood, about what it was like growing up in Boston. He remembered the time he lost his high school baseball championship the same day as his graduation. He even wore his baseball uniform under his graduation gown. But ultimately, Tortorella doesn't want to talk about himself.
I said I'm not taking your answering any of your questions. No. Have you ever fought before?
Yeah.
You have?
Yeah. Why? Are you challenging me now?
No, I'm not challenging you.
Okay.
He's private.
Just no respect amongst players. None. Sickening.
Ask him too many personal questions and he'll change the subject. That might surprise you, because you know Tortorella. He gets emotional. He lashes out at media.
Are you answering all questions or what?
I guess that's what I'm saying, Brooksy. You get that through your head?
I guess so.
Yeah.
And it's time to waste your time.
Oh, then out of here then.
I am.
Okay, see ya. Next question.
He once ran down a hall and tried to enter an opposing team's dressing room.
John Tortorella has gone over to the Calgary Flames hallway outside their room. That's the Canucks coach outside the Calgary room. There's Brian McGrattan trying to push him aside with some of the Calgary staff.
Okay, he's got to calm down.
Yep.
Tortorella has said the wrong things to players, he'll admit. He's trying to get better at that, but he'll protect his players from the media. And he'll protect his own privacy, too.
This is going to be really quick. I'm not taking any questions. We sucked from head to toe, and we need to move by it. So I'm not going to dissect it with you guys. I know you have to do your job, but I'm not answering any questions. Okay, so that's your finish.
Fans can find this story and more on Sportsnet.ca. Canada's home for sports news, analysis, videos, and features.
Sarah.
The Vegas Golden Knights. Everybody, a big hand for the owner, majority owner, Mr. Bill Foley.
Las Vegas
the Maloof brothers back here. Come on up.
She's gone to Las Vegas.
General manager George McPhee. And a big round of applause for the commissioner, Gary Bettman.
Welcome back to Tape to Tape. Joining us on the line now to talk a little fashion, it is Chris Creamer of sportslogos.net. Chris, how you doing?
I'm good, but let's pretend that we're not talking about fashion. We're talking hockey.
Okay. Well, give us your initial take, the big unveiling of the Vegas Golden Knights logo. As soon as it hit your eyes, what went through your brain?
I thought it doesn't look that bad. It might be that we're preconditioned to expect the worst when it comes to new logos these days. I'm not sure, but when I saw it, I thought, hey, that's not too bad. It's not perfect. It's not the worst. It's a couple of tweaks away from perfect. But for a new team in the NHL, I think they did all right.
What would those tweaks be in your mind?
Well, little things like maybe tweaking the shape of the shield. I wouldn't mind seeing a little bit of red added to the primary logo. It's all over the alternate logo, but nowhere else. I think once the uniforms are unveiled, we'll get a better look at the entire brand with red incorporated. But to have it missing from the primary logo is a little strange for me.
I want to ask you about the jerseys, and I find it interesting you said that they should maybe have used more red, because I look at that secondary logo and I think about what these jerseys might look like, and I wonder, how does the red fit in here to the jersey as a whole? And I wonder how much it might look like those old Phoenix Coyotes jerseys that had a lot going on with them. There's a lot of colors here, and how are they all going to come together in a jersey? How do you think that's going to look?
I get the sense that it's not going to be too crazy. I mean, I'm sure there's going to be some Vegas flair added to this in one way or another. I haven't actually seen the jerseys myself, but I'm expecting good things. I hear they're going to be gray for the home jersey and I assume white for the road jersey with a little bit of red added. I wouldn't say that we're going to get some inaugural season Coyotes going on here. There's not nearly as many colors to worry about, at least crazy bright colors that go from all ends of the spectrum here. We're talking, you know, essentially two shades of black, a gold and a red trim. If anything, it might resemble the Ottawa Senators in terms of color scheme.
Just curious, Chris, what are some of the expansion jerseys from the past, like whatever, we'll say, you know, 25 years that, or new teams, teams that have moved that stood out to you immediately, ones that you looked at and thought, oh, that's pretty cool. Because let's face it, I'm guessing all sports, but certainly in hockey, you know, we always value the logos, the jerseys that have been around for so long, they have history attached to them. But have there been a couple who you thought right off the bat, man, they really nailed it with this one?
Well, maybe the San Jose Sharks. They were the ones who really brought teal into the sporting world. It was a color that we never really saw in hockey before, and everyone fell in love with it right away. And it works so perfect with a team like Sharks. And this one's a little polarizing, I know, but the Columbus Blue Jackets, their logo with the bug and everything, that wasn't much to get too excited about. But their uniforms were very sort of simple, almost traditional, but with some new modern things thrown in. You don't really notice it, but there's horizontal stripes that are sort of hidden in the background of the old Blue Jackets uniforms, and the little bit of pop with the electric yellow that they had as a trim color. Those are two that really stood out for me. I was never really a fan of the Atlanta Thrashers or the Nashville Predators, what they did. You go back to the Ottawa Senators, and they had a very traditional look. They had to with the name that they had. And the Tampa Bay Lightning, I'm kind of surprised about their inaugural season jerseys, just because, you know, with an identity like the Lightning, it could have gotten a lot worse than that.
We had a couple other jersey unveilings in the last few days. The Centennial Classic Maple Leafs and Red Wings. I kind of like them. I know the Leafs one has got mixed reviews. What do you think of those two?
I like the history that they went with behind the Leafs jersey. The execution, I'm not so sure about. The horizontal stripe, everyone, mm-hmm. of course, the first thing they think of is Montreal Canadiens. How can you design a uniform that looks like your number one rival for the last 100 years? It's supposed to be an homage to the Toronto St. Pats, but that's something that's going to be lost on a lot of
go St. Pats then.
For the Red Wings jerseys, I do like the nod to the Stanley Cup championships on the arms. There's a little silver stripe on each arm with each of the cup championships, and it looks like they're engraved right into the jersey. They're not, obviously, but the design technique they use looks like they just engraved Stanley Cup years right onto the arm. a brilliant technique. I could do without the sort of chrome gradient logo that they went with on the chest. For, you know, for an event that just begged to be a throwback game, a heritage game, the Centennial Classic of all things, I'm kind of disappointed that they didn't go back to, say, you know, the 1918 Toronto Arenas or the, you know, 1927 Detroit Cougars and really nail home, you know, that this is original season stuff. Instead, they decided to, you know, look at the past a little bit, but focus more on what could happen the next 100 years. I can see what they were thinking. I just wish that they went, you know, all the way back. If any event had an excuse for going all the way back, it would have been the Centennial Classic.
The outdoor games have brought about a flood of new jerseys in the past decade. Again, off the top of your head, any ones that really stood out in your mind as teams that really got it right?
I like any team that, you know, throws right back to an original jersey. The Penguins, they went back to the Baby Blues when they played in that first Winter Classic in Buffalo. Even when the Leafs and Red Wings played in Ann Arbor, and they both wore their primary color jerseys, red versus blue, with the snowflakes falling. To me, it doesn't get any better than that. Red versus bright red versus bright blue on, you know, in a snowstorm. Can you think of a better uniform matchup than that? I can't. And I think that's another missed opportunity in the Centennial Classic, is that they could have easily done all red versus all blue, no need for a white uniform at all. I really think they sort of dropped the ball on that one.
This is a general one, but what do you make of the state of jerseys today in the NHL? I mean, is there any overall themes that you think are a little too prevalent, or teams are too hard on this or that, or do you think for the most part they're doing well with what they're rolling out there most nights?
I think there's too many of them. I'm a fan of, you know, a home and a road, and now and then wear an alternate jersey. It seems now with all these outdoor games, you know, the Stadium Series, the Centennial Classic, the Winter Classic, the Heritage Classic, there's a special jersey almost for everything now. You know, even teams having throwback series, like the Kings have a special 50th anniversary jersey, but they're also wearing throwback jerseys on top of that. Too many. You know, I like to see some consistency. I like to know what a team's going to be wearing from night to night. And, two or three jerseys tops. I don't like that some teams are rolling out four or five every season.
Favorite all-time jersey, Chris?
Oh, I've never been asked this question before.
What? I don't know if you have a bias you want to put on the table or not, but fire away.
For home jersey or dark jersey, I would say the Montreal Canadiens, which I'm a Leafs fan, so a lot of my Leaf fan friends hate hearing that. They can't understand how I would say that, but you know, you close your eyes, you think of a hockey jersey, you see the Montreal Canadiens. I don't care who you are.
Oui, monsieur.
For a road jersey, it's the Detroit Red Wings with the red cutouts and Gordie Howe.
Yeah. I feel like the Wings gets overlooked a little bit in the classic. Probably in Canada because we always talk Montreal, Toronto. But yeah, Detroit's, it is a beauty, no doubt about that. Chris, it's been great breaking down the Vegas logo and a bunch of other ones. Thanks so much for joining us.
No problem. Thank you, guys.
That is Chris Creamer of Sports Logos.
Chicago Blackhawks for me.
SportsLogos.net. You can follow him at SportsLogosNet on the Twitter. Well, I think it's safe to assume that Chris is thankful for awesome jerseys of all kinds in honor of American Thanksgiving. Let's rhyme off a few of the things that we're thankful for here a quarter of the way through this 16-17 NHL season. I know one thing you're thrilled to have in your life is the Vancouver Canucks.
You know, the Maple Leafs have all this promise around them now, and they're playing much better than they did a year ago, and the Edmonton Oilers had a terrific start. Connor McDavid is tearing it up. Where's the punching bag? You need a punching bag, right? So we have the Vancouver Canucks. They have no direction. They think they're a playoff hopeful, and they're clearly not. They look like the favorite to end up at the bottom of the league. They're kind of stuck. There it goes.
Swirling around.
They are stuck.
There's nothing
they can do.
There's nothing worse than being a fan with misguided ownership, right? Like, being bad really isn't, I mean, in some ways, being bad is the second best thing you can be, because the best thing is great and possibly winning a championship. Maybe the second best thing is bad, because that's how you go down and then you come back up if you have the right people in place trying to make those moves.
Sure.
But Vancouver is just, there's no sense that that's what's going on.
No.
And it sounds like an ownership thing largely from the top, that it's just a little short-sighted, right? Like, trying to keep those seats going with people in them. You know, here's Louis Erickson. Okay, like, is that...
I do hate the idea of tanking, though. And I've said
this
many times on this show, because it's so easy to say, oh, just trade everything away and be crappy for a couple of years and you will be good, because we have seen so many examples of teams try to do that and they don't get to
but
where
you have
they
to do
go.
It well. Like, you can't be the I'm not saying it's a silver bullet and for sure it will happen, but if you've been cheering for a team in the mushy middle for a long time, I mean, you just realize at a certain point you just can't get the guys. And obviously the Leafs are, you know, the most recent example, but I mean,
I just don't think it's good for the league.
How do you do it? How do you get, if you're like a B team, how do you get to be an A plus team if you can't draft 1, 2, 3 overall?
Well, you get really smart with trying to find hidden value. Like I'll use the Panthers as an example, and the kind of guys they've been picking up recently, like the Jonathan Marchessaults, and those guys aren't going to make you...
It's Barkov who's going to lead them, and Ekblad who's going to, if they win the cup.
Yes, for sure. But I mean, that's also a team that for years was picking in the top three, top five, and they weren't going anywhere.
I just wonder if it's different now with...
I just think it's bad for the league when you have teams that are intentionally, you know, trying to, like the Buffalo Sabres, that was embarrassing when they're trading away a goalie who's starting to win games. It's just not good for the league. And I wish the league, I don't think there's a great example of what a rule would be yet,
but it's
of how to kind of avoid this. And maybe, you know what the ultimate solution to me is, and it's really simple, and I don't think they'll ever do it, is you miss the playoffs. I don't care if you just missed the playoffs or you were the last place team. You have this, it's just a ping pong ball, you get that pick.
But it's good for the league that a team like Buffalo has a chance to revitalize its market by maybe drafting. They were going for Connor McDavid that year, you know? Like,
yep.
I mean, on a micro level, I get it. You could say from a competitive standpoint, you don't want teams, quote unquote, trying not to win. But even that Buffalo team was, because of how things are, is probably losing 2-1, 3-2, 4-2. I mean, it's not like they're going out and getting smashed. I don't know. I just think it's your best shot, and it brings hope to if fans are getting more and more sophisticated, so it's not like everyone's showing up every day and being like, well, I hope my team wins today. It's more like, how's the organization doing? Who's in the system, you know?
And I think part of the reason these teams end up in these situations is because they have bad management that isn't transitioning. They're picking up players, maybe signing them for too much or giving up too much in a trade for a guy who really isn't contributing that much, but he kind of fits that mold of a traditional player. And you find yourself just backsliding, and I think good management can avoid a bunch of these teams ultimately sinking to, you know, a full tank.
Do you know what Vancouver fans are thankful for? The fact that they only had John Tortorella as a coach for 1 year. But we're thankful he's still in the league, right?
Because you wonder how long he's going to be in the league for.
Well, if this Columbus is his last. Columbus is doing all right.
I guess that's what I'm saying, Brooksy. You get that through your head?
He is overdue for a huge meltdown, and that's what I'm thankful for. I am thankful for his meltdowns because they are amazing, and I can't wait for the next one to happen. You never know what he's going to say, when he's going to say it. He's had some close calls. He had a hilarious moment, I think it was last week or maybe the week before, where he was talking about, I think it was practice he was talking about, and he was about to use a swear word in the middle of a sentence, and he stopped himself.
He caught it.
Yeah, he goes, I would have said, the old me would have said that.
He's getting mellow in his old age.
He's a weird dude, yeah. It's good to have weird dudes.
You go back to the last few days of the offseason, and, you know, we're gearing up. The World Cup's over, and we're gearing up for the start of the season, and the news breaks that Sidney Crosby's out. related to concussions and huge red flag. I mean, I think at that point we were probably talking about it on the pod, like, who, you know, obviously you were going to take every precaution with Crosby, but there was part of you that thought, uh-oh, you know, are we going to go half the year without Crosby? And lo and behold, he's only out for a short time, comes back, just sniping.
Yep.
I mean, for all the talk of Connor McDavid, Patrick Laine, Austin Matthews, pretty thankful to still have Sidney Crosby playing as the man in the NHL.
Yeah, and hopefully it holds up for the rest of the season. I mean, Connor McDavid one day, and maybe sooner than we think, will pass Crosby as the best player in the world, but he's not there yet. And as great as McDavid, I mean, man, his speed is just...
it's other level.
It's something else. But Crosby brings this all-around game, and like we've seen so far this year, coming back after missing the first few games with an injury, he's been head and shoulders better than everybody else with the pace that he's scoring at the goals, the assists. I mean, he does it all. So I'm thankful for his health, and I hope it lasts for the rest of this season, next season, the season after. Hopefully he doesn't have any major health concerns through the rest of his career so that we can see really what kind of points he can put up over a full career, because you're going to have Ovechkin over the next 10 years. You know, we're going to be talking about whether or not he can pass Gretzky's goal record. You're never going to have something like that with Crosby because he's not going to score those goals. He's not going to get those points. But what kind of points can he get in his time?
I'm thankful that Phil Kessel is showing his point per game form in Pittsburgh. He's just like, you know, the Pens, there was so much tension there after they didn't win another one. And now they won another Stanley Cup. And you have to think they're like, we're feeling pretty good. Just go out and play now. Same for Kessel. First year in Pittsburgh, scoring down. Only had 59 points last year, and I kind of just remember, as someone who watched him so much here, thought, I think he's still a better player than that. And you know what? I have to say, too, 15 assists out of his 20 points. I always thought he was an underrated playmaker when he was here in Toronto, if you watched him on that line with Bozak and JVR, which it's funny because Marner's obviously known as a big disher, and you know, the dynamic probably isn't as different as you'd think with Marner on that line, but way to go, Phil Kessel, showing his elite talent with the Pens. Of course, the Pens went with a lot of speed to win that cup last year. And, man, there is just, I mean, you reference McDavid, and we talk, you know, ad nauseum about the young guys in this league, but it's worth repeating. I think we have to be thankful that Canada was such a wasteland for skilled players back in the late 90s, and we had to have a national crisis after losing the 96 World Cup and 98 Olympics. And, you know, go back and watch that shootout against Dominic Hasek. I mean, he's a good goalie, but my God, those guys weren't even... Eric Lindros hit the post. He was like the only guy who put on a real move. And now if you lined up the top five Canadian shooters, I mean, you're going to see some serious razzle dazzle, and that just wasn't the case back then. So I mean, got to be thankful we live in this age of the NHL where there is just such an emphasis on speed and skill.
And they had that summit after 98 was the terrible year where you didn't medal at all in the World Juniors. You lost to Kazakhstan. You had the terrible Nagano Olympics, like you were just talking about. They had a summit talk about, you know, skill development in the minor leagues from, you know, grow that on the way up. And Connor McDavid is certainly the poster child for that now, but he's not the first one. Like, he would have been just born, I guess, when that, when 98 happened. And so we're also talking about Tyler Seguins and John Tavares.
Yeah. All the guys born in the 90s.
Yeah, the guys who grew up in the minor hockey system. I mean, Sidney Crosby would have got it at the tail end. I guess he would have been 11 years old when that crisis happened. But it's basically all the guys after that, the last 10 years or so, who have grown up in that minor hockey. And it's, you know, you wonder how much of an influence that has actually had. If Canada medals in Nagano and wins silver or gold in the 98 World Juniors, and there's never a crisis, what kind of players do we have today? I'm curious. I'm honestly curious. Well, how much that influenced the skill that we see in coming into Canada today.
Well,
and I think the United States has had to match that too.
I mean, you look at the
so it's had an effect on them as well.
No doubt, yes, lots to be thankful for when you're talking about the game of hockey, and of course when you're two guys doing a podcast for a living on Sportsnet.ca, which is where you can find the Tape to Tape podcast. You can also subscribe in iTunes. You can check out Rory on Twitter at Rory Boylan, myself at Dixon on Sports. That's all we have for you this time. But check back next week for more Glass Rattlin' hockey action on Tape to Tape.
Ooh, Las Vegas, ain't no place for a poor boy like me. Ooh, Las Vegas, ain't no place for a poor boy like me. Every time I hit your Crystal City, you know you're gonna make a wreck out of me. Well, first time I lose, I drink whiskey. Second time I lose, I drink gin. Third time I lose, I drink anything, 'cause I think I'm gonna win. Ooh, Las Vegas.